We're in Aya, in Piskal Lamed, and we saw last week the Gemara in Masechet Shabbat, Daf Yud Aleph. Is everyone here last time?
Okay.
We'll go quickly over the Gemara. We won't go over everything Rav Kook said, but just in a nutshell, because we're in the middle of the topic. The Gemara, the Amar Rav Bar Machsia, Amar Rav Chama Bar Guria, Amar Rav, Tachat Yishmael velo Tachat Akum. We saw in Rav Kook that the Gersa is Edom. In other words, it's bad to be under the rule of the Arabs, of the Muslims. And here the first topic is the importance of living under independent Jewish rule, appreciating the Jewish state that we have. But if that's bad enough to live under Muslim rule, it's even worse to live under Christian rule, right? And historically,
we that know could that. Change historically, though. It might be worse now.
Usually things which are in Gemara are more eternal, but the Germans, it's hard to beat them for anything. It's hard to
good imagine. Good idea to beat them very hard.
Tachat akum velo tachat chaver. And here Rashi explains that the chaver is a group of non-Jews from Persia who were more wild and more unpredictable than the Muslims, than the Christians. In other words, the Christians are worse, and they have a religious and ideological problem with the Jews. And that's why their crusades were, life under the Christians in Europe was that much worse. But at least they're predictable. In other words, the Christians, and we mentioned the Yekis, you know, the Germans were monsters, but they're predictable monsters. In other words, they had, there was some kind of, right, there was a consistency in there. And that way, you know.
The Jews who had thought they had the Germans from World War I figured out, found out in the Shoah that they didn't.
That's for sure. Sometimes, if an anti-Semit is really bad, you could just lower your head and eventually it'll pass over. Masha Inken, with the Persian, these wild people who were totally unpredictable, that's even worse. But we saw last week, the Gemara continues, Tachat Chaver Velochat Tachat Tamid Chacham, that it's very difficult to be under the rule, to be subjective to a Tamid Chacham. And we spoke about...
The end words must be saying something.
Right, that that the Talmid Chacham, and we saw this in Rav Kook also last year, we mentioned it last week in a different Pisgah, that with all the beauty of being idealistic and intelligent, sometimes that comes at the account of natural manners, of natural emunah, of natural behavior. And that's why it's difficult to be married to a Talmid Chacham. It's difficult to be under a boss who is a Talmid Chacham. Right? Anybody who's spoken to mankalim of yeshivot directors knows that sometimes it's very, very difficult. If a Talmid Chacham is very particular, if the Torah trains us to pay attention to details, right? And sometimes the Chachamim, it could even get to an eccentricity. Right, that very often, we mentioned last week, that genius and eccentricity can go together.
If you have a wife who's one, it's probably the worst.
So the genius pool is on the center.
Tachat Talmid Chacham, velo tachat yatom va'almana. This is the last on the list, that even though it's difficult to live under and with a intelligent, genius, scholar, idealist, another point that we mentioned last week is that there's a fine line between idealism and stubbornness. It's even more difficult to live or to be subjected to an orphan or a widow. And that's our topic for tonight. Iska Lamet. First of all, we'll just remember Rashi, which we saw last week. Talmid Chacham, Rashi explains, In Yakni Tenu Yanishenu. Talmid Chacham says that if a person is cursed by a rabbi, by a scholar, then he'll be punished. That's another aspect. V'chein yatom va'almana, the same thing, and even worse, even more so, regarding an orphan and a widow, mi'nesh dimatam mitzuya. The pasuk tells us that because the orphan and the widow, they're very quick to cry, and Chazal tell us that shari dima lo ninalu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu cannot ignore when a person is crying, and therefore you got to be very careful in anything you have to do with an orphan or a widow. And like with
all Agadah, also that probably has something to do with food.
You mentioned that last week, right? Pisca lavet. Tachat tamid chacham velo tachat yatom ve'almana. Im ki kasher loredet l'sof dat nefesh hachacham mitzad gedulata v'netiyotea hapratiyot hagvohot midarkei ha'amon. Even though, as we saw last week and in the previous paragraph, that it really is difficult to fully comprehend and to transmit on the same wavelength as a scholar, mitzad gedulata, in terms of his greatness, unetiyotea pratiyot, his private leanings, right? Very often, scholars accept upon themselves chumrot, and even though, and as everybody knows this, all the poskim, when poskim for the masses, they know that they have to be mekel. In their own houses, they're machmir. What's in their own house? Their wife, their children are subject, and that's something which is very difficult. Hagvohot midarkei amon, and they're transmitting on a different wavelength, on a deeper, higher, more idealistic wavelength. That is difficult. Mikom makom, lo kol kach rachok hadavar me'ashara habriya shel isha tivi. On the other hand, even though the average person, the masses, are not on the same wavelength, they're on the same planet. And they can imagine, they can get to that hashara habriya, right? It's within their realm. If they think hard enough, they examine the situation deep enough, they will understand where the genius or where the rabbi is coming from.
So the Talmid Chacham is predictable, unlike the Chaver.
Right. I guess you could say so. Mipnei shelefi tchunat ha'adam hu omed litchaken kesheyirtze. This is an interesting chidush. That a person is meant to be intelligent. Whereas all the masses are also meant to be intelligent. It's not like if you're not born a genius and you never were a genius, so you just can't be on that planet. You have no safa meshutefet, you have no common denominator, common language with the chacham. Rav Kook says, no. Every person has the potential, if not to be that chacham, at least to understand the chacham. Hmm. Right? There's the difference between understanding and recognition. Like in education, the difference between a multiple choice test, it's called in Hebrew a Mivchan Amerikai, I don't know why. When you see an answer on the multiple choice test, you recognize it. It's like Bodim America.
I think it's a subtle curse against America.
But it's a lower level of knowledge where if you see four answers, you recognize the answer. To know is a higher level than to recognize. And that's what Rav Kook is saying here also. Not everyone can know the knowledge of a Talmid Chacham, but they can. If he explains it to you, you should be able to understand. Okay. Not only that, Rav Kook stresses that is really the role of man. That is where he should be directing his aspirations to be intelligent. Right? That's the intelligence is one of the basic things that differentiates between man and animals, between man and angels. That we have that intelligence, that creative, to be able to understand. So Rav Kook is saying, yeah, most people don't understand the Talmid Chacham, but they should be able to. right? If they work hard enough.
Malachim don't have intelligence?
Malachim, intelligence is usually, they have chokhmah, but not bina. Okay, in other words, they don't have that creativity.
I thought they had intelligence, but not free will.
Also. I don't know that. I know they have chokhmah. I don't think they have bina, because bina is usually associated with free will. Al ken ikvot shel hashara timatze gam belev ish lulumad al ufyo shel hachacham af shebefrato v'mizgav mimeno. Therefore, the ikvot shel hashara, the basic a touch of hashara is understanding.
Even somebody, an estimation,
right? Even somebody who has not learned alofio shel chacham, about the ofi, the character of a chacham, af shebeprato hu nisgav mimenu, right? The details of a chacham are above him, but the ofi, the character, is something that he can associate with. Okay. Omnam, ha'adam beteva omed lehov et hachayim v'simchatam. Here Rav Kook is shifting gears into the yatam v'almana. What's the problem with an orphan and a widow? Man, in his nature, as we said before, is intelligent. If intelligence is the problem, take a tutor, ask some questions, eventually you'll be able to understand that which the rabbi is saying. But happiness is a basic nature, an even more basic nature. Normal people want to enjoy life. They want to have pleasure. That we spoke about once, that the Ramchal in the Silat Yesharim says that is the goal of man. The goal of man is to be happy. What kind of happiness? Go for the real spiritual happiness, right? But anywhere you go in the world, in South America or North America or South Africa or Asia, everybody wants to be happy. That is the nature of man. Different things bring different people happiness, especially on the physical level, right? Some people like these type of nuts, some people like that. An Englishman thinks baseball is boring, an American thinks that cricket is
way off this
pitch. Let's expect to come out and stand it. Let's be not.
But the bottom line is everybody wants to be happy. Via ish. By the way, I think we mentioned this once. Rav Moshe Feinstein was once asked, why are almost all the Jews in America not religious? And he says, because the previous generation drilled it into their kids, the saying in Yiddish, oi, is Shver Tzazayna Yid. Right? We spoke about that once. That it's hard to be a Jew. And the kids picked it up that they didn't want to be Jewish, that it's not happy, it's not pleasure to be Jewish. Mm. And Rav Kook says that is a healthy nature to want happiness. But an individual who, for whatever reason, it might not even be his fault, like in the examples given here, right? It's not his fault. It's something that happened around him. Nevertheless, he is missing happiness in his life. That is unnatural. By Rav Kook, the word unnatural means be very careful. Because nature is godly, nature is good. And somebody who, for whatever reason, loses their happy nature, it's very difficult to live with them.
You know, so if I'm thinking of those of our of parents, grandparents who are survivors of the Shoah are probably the best case in point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot's been written now about the second generation, even the third generation, of all of the different mishugasim that people have from the Shoah. They say that even the second generation, you know, two generations afterwards, the grandchildren, that it shows up. Right? That's a good example. You want to say? Rikshotav einam tivim. This is an important observation. Rav Kook says that somebody, an orphan or a widow, somebody who has lost that basic happiness, his emotions are not natural. I think I remember growing up in New York 40 years ago, there were a lot of Holocaust survivors. And emotion, that which Rav Kook mentions here now, that was like, if you think back of it, that was like one of the topics that didn't show emotion. Or they didn't cry. Or they, after everything they've been through, no matter what happens, is katan aleihem. It's not, it doesn't move them. Like these are, it must be a manginon, a defense mechanism that they developed. Also happiness. They didn't really, I remember that noticing as a kid that you could tell a Holocaust survivor from a non-Holocaust survivor by the way they smile. Somebody who grew up in America has a big smile. And the Holocaust, they just didn't have it. Right? And Rav Kook is saying, which of the two is natural? It's natural to be happy. Al-Ken Yimalei Ketzef, these people who are missing that happiness, they get angry al-netunim tachat pkudato. Those who are under their rule, how are who can they take it out on? They kick the dog. Right? They beat their wife, they beat their children, their
the household.
Right? All the social workers know that if somebody's unhappy, his household and his marriage and his children, nobody's going to be happy around them.
Or it can be psychological brutality. Nothing is ever good enough, and insulting people and making real wisecracks that get under their skin and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So it's very difficult to live with somebody like that. V'lo yuchlu limalot chafatzav apnimim. You cannot satisfy them because they're not satisfied with anything. Because even if you make them happy, they always have in the back of their mind their basic tragedy. And that's why, on the one hand, it's very important to these volunteer movements like, what's it called, Zichron Menachem, things like that, that the kids, children who are sick, and take them out to the amusement park and to try and help them forget their problems. But the bottom line is there are certain things you just can't forget. And again, the Holocaust example is a classic example, right? That's something that you know the Germans could pay for. My father-in-law used to get a weekend free, right, in a hotel, you know, once a year. Now, give me a break. What does that help? It was even during that week, I'm sure that's always in the back of your mind.
You know how. You know, does the Jewish people not have a sort of national problem with? Since the Churban Bayis, since the Galut, we were sent into exile, and we spent 2,000 years hankering back to, you know, wanting to get back to our land, but we had a sort of national sadness. I mean, national.
The idea of national memory is a lot has been written on that. There's a professor, there's a Yerid, he's originally Israeli, he left named Chaim Yosef Yerushalmi, who wrote a bestseller, and the name is in Hebrew, Zachor. He wrote it in English, and it's about the collective memory, and there's a lot of difference of opinion how much a collective memory has, and for sure, there is a certain extent, a certain amount. Pesach is part of a collective memory, right, so that every person should see himself as if he left Egypt, right?
Just wondering, like, how much what Rob's saying here impacts on us as a people, you know, are we capable of being normal to people around us and change?
America relates to us, Damfka, in that context. Anybody who knows the story of Jonathan Pollard, when he came with the intelligence reports about the nuclear or chemical warfare that Iraq was preparing to use on Israel, the reaction when he said this is information that the U.S. Navy intelligence should be passing on to Israel, the answer that he got was, no, Jews, they get uppity about genocide. Right? They're worried about genocide. They always have it on their mind. On the other hand, a lot's been written also about the first generation Sabras and the Olim who came on Aliyah after the Holocaust, who just opened a new page. And they did a certain denial, They didn't talk at all about the Holocaust. It's very common here about it on Yom HaShoah. You know, my parents, my grandparents, until recently, they didn't even talk about it. Not only because it was an embarrassment, you know, but in fact, they wanted to open a new page. They wanted to be a new Jew, not the Jew who went like cattle to slaughter, but a Jew who's going back to David HaMelech, to the Maccabees, to Yoshua ben Nun, to a respectful Jew. And sometimes the only way that you can do that is to artificially turn off a certain memory. And even use the defense mechanism to overcompensate in the other direction.
And wait for the next generation to grow up without having been influenced by it and to be healthier.
Yeah. And eventually that's what history, HaKadosh Baruch Hu built history in a way that God always turns, the homeostasis will always win out. But like Rav Kook is saying, that first generation, it's hard to live with them. Mm-hmm. Right? And for those who were not in the Holocaust, whether they grew up in Israel, whether they grew up in America, they could not understand their spouses. There's a certain spot in their spouse. And again, it's not really a spot. It's a whole
person. I mean, normally survivors married other survivors. Right. My in-laws were an exception.
I know of other exceptions also. It happened. But Dafka, because of that, it was more normal for a survivor to marry a survivor. V'lo yichlu lemalot chafatzav ha-pnimim. You cannot satisfy. If you're married to someone like that... Right, a wife whose husband is a survivor, she can't satisfy him because there's always something missing. What's missing? His father, his mother, his first wife. You know, there's so much going on in there.
Yelled at each other and bickered for 60 years.
Yeah, sure. Not on tape. Shehem hafuchim miteva haadam hayashar vabari. These people are not natural. They're not healthy. And again, even if it's not their fault, in Malasot, Shesimchata Chayim va'alitzutam, that the happiness of life, the joy, Him nimsachim betivo. Normal people have it pouring out of them. And these people are just don't have that natural moisture.
Joie de vivre.
Sorry?
Love of life.
Yeah. Alken, Tachat Talmid Chacham, Velo tachad yatom ve'almana. That's why, with all the difficult to work with a Talmid Chacham that we went into length last week, it's even more difficult to get along and to be under to be subjected to an orphan and a widow. Shelevavama nergash v'asonam hishbit mehem simchat hachayim b'milu'ah. Right? B'milu'ah means not totally. Right? They still have a little happiness, otherwise they wouldn't get married. Or they wouldn't even be able to have that little happiness. Nevertheless, the total happiness that normal people are capable of getting, they're just not. Al ken, techsar lehem ha'ayin ha'tova, ha'doreshet tzalat lev v'simcha pnimit bashkafata al ha'chaim. They don't have that positive Ayin Tova. Ayin Tova in Pirkei Avot is referring to generosity, to being positive, and if you have a boss who's always edgy, right, he doesn't have it. Right? I was once in Miluim with a guy, I still remember his name, I won't say it on tape, even though I'm sure nobody here will know him. This guy, he was just weird. He was single. He was in his young 30s. He was so lazy and so... he just used to... It was hot in Miluim, so he used to open up the refrigerator and stand in front of the refrigerator, you know. And everyone's telling him, you know, it's not going to work and the food is going to spoil. And he couldn't care less. It's just so super self-centered. And I remember we were in Miluim and Shvut Rachel. So the Shvut Rachel is a big yeshuv, and it's all one circle. And our migurim, where we were sleeping, was about a minute away. in one direction, in a certain direction, to the right, say. So this guy, he was so lazy and so self-centered, he would take his car. You know, when it was nice, he didn't want to walk that minute walk. Anyway, one time we had to hurry back to get a mishmeret, to eat and get a mishmeret. So the fact that he took his car, so we all jumped in. But instead of doing a K-turn or a U-turn or turning around, he drove around the entire yeshuv. So I asked him why. He was normal, a very intelligent guy. He worked in computers. You don't know that, you know, you just turn around and we're in a hurry.
He didn't want to bother making
He didn't want to bother making that movement.
Too much effort.
Exactly. And I said to myself, well, this guy's a real pig. In other words, no wonder that he's not married.
Computer guys are the most lazy because they design everything to do the least amount of work.
To make a long story short, this guy was a real, you know, and also when you're a miluim with somebody for a month and you're living with them in the same quarters, you get to know them and all their mishigasim. This guy had so many mishigasim, and only mamash among the last days of miluim, it turns out he was a yatom. He was an orphan. His mother passed away when he was very young, when he was a little boy. And it was so shakuf that everything came back to that.
His parent.
Everything came back to that. I'm sure, you know, the way his father related to him was as a result, the fact that he was spoiled and lazy and self-centered. And that person is not a happy camper.
So we're saying here, according to the Gemara, that it's not good to be under that person's control. Does that mean we should not put those people in positions of leadership? Well, we have on one hand, we have a mitzvah to be kind to the Yatom, the Almanah. We shouldn't, as it were, prejudice against them.
There's a mitzvah to love the ger, but you can't put him in
It's
a very good question. The guidelines, the Gevulot Gizrah, is halacha. If there's no halacha against it in the Shulchan Aruch, then the answer is if he is the most competent person, without a doubt. On the other hand, what is Rafkin telling us? Even if it's not in the Shulchan Aruch, beware, be careful. You know, it's a nurit azhara, a warning light. The same thing before you marry somebody like that. If somebody asks a Rav, should you not marry somebody who's an orphan or a widow? By all means, the answer is, of course, it's a mitzvah. And especially if you marry an orphan, every time you help him with anything, you're getting so many different mitzvot, right, of helping an orphan. Right? That's the halacha. On the other hand, why is Rav Kook writing this? The answer is be careful. In other words, check him out. Can you live with him? The example that I gave before, on the first day, you picked up that this guy was not normal. Most people have healthy manganonim that they can cover up their mishugasim, and that you don't notice it until the sixth date, and
2 years in.
And sometimes 2 years in.
Isn't this also the most of Rav Kook's? Because he's saying these people aren't so natural, therefore you have to be nicer to them, you have to make sure you work around their mishugasim and squeeze.
For sure, without a doubt. That goes without saying. What Giddy mentions, it's an obvious point, which I really should have stressed. Obviously, that's a mitzvah midoraita, that you have to go out of your way to help the orphan. You have to go out of your way to help the widow. Nevertheless, realize that if you're going to marry them,
be prepared.
Yeah, you got to be ready for it. Because that's what the Gemara is talking about.
You can help a person, but that doesn't mean you have to vote for them or put them in a position of responsibility if they're not suited for it.
By the way, I think what Yoshua said before is really the ideal solution, is that survivors should marry survivors. It's the most natural.
They understand each other.
And the same thing, that I once set up somebody from the yeshiva with one of my students. It was a Ravak. And the first thing that I thought about, I asked him, why did you set us up? First thing that I met, there was a lot in common, but the first thing that I thought of, and that's what I told them, that both heroes are orphans, both of them lost parents. They know, they can understand, right? My sister, Aleh Ashalom, passed away. Her husband remarried. And Baruch Hashem is working great. But one of the reasons why it's working so great is because the second wife was an orphan herself. In other words, she's been through it. She knows where they're coming from, and she knows, you know, what to help. Unfortunately, somebody who's undergone a terrible tragedy, their lack that natural happiness, which has ramifications on everything that they see in life. When they see a flower, they don't see it in the same way that most natural, happy people do. Somebody who's under their not rule, there's a better word,
domination.
Domination. Somebody who's under their domination can never satisfy them. And you can't understand their inner desire in the details of the walks of life. Life is very complex. And there are a lot of details, a lot of walks regarding what you eat, what you drink, your sleeping habits, your showering habits. And again, anybody who's been through something, a trauma, we have to be sensitive, right? I would say that the most important thing that we should take to this in our day-to-day lives is what Gibby said. It was to be sensitive to those people, to the survivors or Yitomot and Almani, even though that's not the topic of the Gemara. Okay, that's probably the reason why it's not the topic which is stressed here, also because it's in the Torah. Yeah.
The problem with our relations with the Arab world is that we're facing a society that has internally had generations and generations of brutality and that's the kind of thing we're unable to relate to.
I remember the first time I went to Hebron and I saw an Arab father beating first his mule and then his child. And I thought, you know, it was bananas. So I said to an Israeli who was with me, I said, shouldn't you do something? He says, that's natural by then. Somebody who grows up in a violent atmosphere is, right?
And they
should be under our domination. But
it's healthier, yeah. They say that the Hamas or whoever it is saying that we are better than the Jews because the Jews love life and we love death. So I mean,
that's what they say.
They say that. They say that. They itch for martyrdom, and you know.
So, you know what? I wish them all of their heart's desire. Again, mish ein b'teva adam lavin el netiya pratit shal yidei sibot. Again, what is sibot? These are external causes, which, if I didn't undergo those same external causes, I'm in a different mindset. Right? It's an interesting interplay that Rav Kook is talking about here between the nature on the one hand, the godly nature, which is good and happy, etc. On the other hand, the occurrences, the incidents, which may happen to a person, like the Rambam writes in Moreh Nevuchim, we mentioned this once last year, that most of the bad that happens in the world is what people do to themselves. And the second most common occurrence is what people do to each other. Hmm. And whether a person did the wrong to himself, or whether somebody else did it to him, those are wrongs that normal, healthy people, they can't identify with. Right? So you have, on the one hand, there is nature. On the other hand, there are these occurrences, these external occurrences. Hanovim mikerav lev sameach bateva. Ki hasimcha hi la'adam tivit. Again, Rav Kook stresses, and this is another one of the major lessons of this paragraph, that happiness is natural. And if you see somebody who is unhappy, help him out, because you can help him get on track. It's not an uphill battle. It's not swimming against the tide. Well, he's a pessimist. Well, maybe he's a pessimist. I mean, he went through a lot of difficulties in life. But a normal person, you can help him get back on track, the track to happiness. Kol zman shelo ne'echar ayde sarut hazman ha'oshkot otam yimeno. Unless that nature has been dirtied by, has been soiled by the storms of times which have prevented him from being himself. So again, there's a lot to feel sorry for them. And there still are a lot of Holocaust survivors around us.
And the breakdown of the family also.
And also that. Also war veterans. You know, people who went through shell shock, somebody who was a prisoner of war, right? These are things. Terror victims. These are things that we all have to be very, very sensitive.
And the breakdown of the family, the incidents of divorce. Mm-hmm. That they don't even call it. When we were kids, they called it a broken home. They think it's natural now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Kids have to help them out. But if somebody is going to set up with somebody who is evicted from his home, before you get engaged, check it out. You know, see what the ramifications are. Even if they're balanced, but it's not natural. Okay. Al ken tachat tamid chacham v'lo tachat yatom v'almana.